If President Barack Obama had zero business or private sector experience before coming to the White House, then President-elect Donald Trump has had zero political experience. Some critics worry about potential conflicts of interest between a Trump administration and the Trump Organization. For more of what ethics rules require of any elected official, we turn to Scott Amey, General Counsel at the Project on Government Oversight. Scott, good to have you on.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what is the precedent here? Because I think it's been a long time, if ever, that a president coming in has the extensive business experience and entanglements that Donald Trump does.
Well, certainly. I think that we're finding out that this is kind of a case of first impression here, and that we haven't had a president come into the White House that has the large amount of business interest that Donald Trump is bringing into the White House.
So what would normally be required of any elected official coming in with respect to outside commercial interests that they come with, large or small?
Well, the point of your question that's really important is what is required. I think there's very little that is actually required by law when it comes to the president coming in and what happens with their business interests, because we've never seen this. I mean, for the most part, most of our presidents have been full-time politicians, and so they've already have either diversified their portfolios or sold off any business interests that they had, and they were easy to come in and set up a blind trust and have an independent manager manage that so that their business interests or financial portfolio never came into play while they were in the White House. But obviously the situation with Donald Trump coming in, running multiple businesses that are in the real estate and hotel businesses, that it raises some concerns, I think, because it's a little harder for him to divest, and also the law doesn't necessarily require it. And so we're kind of at a standstill on kind of what's going to move forward here.
Because if he was a CEO of a public corporation, then obviously he would resign that seat, and whatever stock he had, he could simply sell, and that would be the end of it. But this is different. This is a privately held, I don't know how it's set up. I guess it's a limited liability corporation or whatever it might be, but it's not publicly held, and it's hard to divest of.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. I couldn't have said that better myself. He is in a situation in which it is, you know, Donald Trump, you know, entities. And at that point, yeah, it becomes an issue with how he can diversify those and also, you know, have independence while he's in the White House.
So when he said, I can run my businesses and be president, technically or legally, he was correct. Whether it's a good idea or not, that's another question. But he was actually on correct legal ground?
Well, yes and no. Again, that's where there's a lot of gray area when it comes to government ethics. And this is one of them. About a week ago, the Congressional Research Service put out a report on what conflicts of interest and ethics provisions apply to the president. Well, guess what? It started out with provisions apparently inapplicable to the president. And so the apparently again comes in here. And then it was provisions that potentially are applicable to the president. So even CRS, in taking a look at this, and they're not legal ethics experts, but they put in qualifiers on what may apply and what doesn't apply. Obviously, there are certain rules and ethics laws that have the president is named and is exempt from those laws. There's others that apply. And so that's what I think legal experts probably over at the White House and in Trump's transition team and in the NGO community and the oversight community are taking a look at. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of case law. There aren't a lot of advisory opinions on this. I mean, we're taking a look at some legal standards that go back to the Clinton White House, not only Clinton versus Paula Jones and whether a president can be sued into office, but there was also a case against Hillary at the time on her role in working for the government when she was working on some of the health care reform that she headed up while she was first lady. But then we're also taking a look, one of the other legal precedents that we're taking a look at is a legal opinion from 1974 out of the Department of Justice that involved, I believe it was Nelson Rockefeller. And so, I mean, there isn't a lot of law. There aren't a lot of standards here that apply to the president. For the most part, all the incoming presidents have set up their blind trust, and that was it. And in this case, it's been, there's some questions on what Donald Trump's going to do, and we may have to wait until his announcement on December 15th really to learn what details he's going to, put forth in how he's going to avoid any actual or apparent conflicts of interest that may arise during his presidency.
We're speaking with Scott Amey, General Counsel at the Project on Government Oversight. So I guess really what would be desirable would be some move that would create the perception, at least, or the reality that the president is making decisions solely on what's best public policy for the country, and there's no chance that it would be based on anything that could benefit his personal interests.
Right. And I think that, you know, that's what, you know, the oversight community is kind of called for at this point. And we hope that Congress, you know, takes over an oversight role over that, and that he's getting some good advice, whether it comes from the Office of Government Ethics or the Department of Justice and its Office of Legal Counsel and the people he's surrounding himself with in the White House. But there's a real question on, you know, it seems as if even in Donald Trump's most recent statement last week that he was going to turn over business operations to his children, that may make sense, but there's still some concerns, even if he were to do that, that is he still able to influence decisions that involve the company and those business arrangements, even though he's not in a control, he's not in control of those operations, but even as an ownership interest, will they still reach out to their father, and still could he make government decisions that are driven by whatever interest that he has, either foreign or domestic? And that's a problem.
You have a letter that went to the Trump transition group that recommended certain specific steps. Walk us through those.
Well, the specific steps were to set up a genuine blind trust. At one point, he said by handing over the business operations to the children that would be a blind trust, but that's not necessarily blind if you still can interact with them and you know what decisions they're making, or even unofficially or officially helping them make those decisions. So we would like to see him sell off those interests. Either the children can buy them, or, you know, they can put them up and have the corporation sold off. And then he takes that money in and sets up a true blind trust that is operated by an independent manager and, you know, in some kind of portfolio that Donald wouldn't have any control over.
So cash out, then invest the cash, but not have say over those investments until after he's out of the presidency.
Certainly. Yeah. And yes. And with, you know, obviously the GSA lease, you know, raises a lot of concerns. And even then, you know, that's one that I think that the GSA is going to look at how they're going to be able to, you know, terminate that lease and get someone else in, because, you know, it would, if his children are still operating, you know, the corporation, that they would be in a position where they have to, you know, give information to GSA. They have to go to, you know, annual negotiations with GSA, and there's certain annual requirements in that contract, which also raises a major problem for Donald based on some of the wording in that contract. It raises some ethical questions, because you could have, you know, an appointee serving as the head of that agency, and you do worry about whether then that lease is operating in the best interest of taxpayers, or if there's some kind of pressure from the top that's going to have that work in the favor of the Trump entity.
We're talking about the hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue, just a few blocks from the White House.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, the way to summarize this is that once you're elected president of the United States, you really are changed as an individual, and you can't be the CEO of a privately held empire on January 19th, forget about it for 8 years or 4 years, whatever the case might be, and then resume just as you were 8 years later. That's probably not an option at this level of history.
Well, and it's not only for the president. I mean, I think that applies to all public servants. I mean, there are ethics laws and regulations that are all in the books. There's standards of ethical conduct for employees of the executive branch. I mean, do you want a government that is run by people that are above reproach, that aren't biased in their decisions? And that's where we've always had a divide between public servants and, you know, between the private sector. And I mean, some of those lines have gotten blurred as we outsource more work to contractors and we turn to the private sector for assistance as we're operating the government. But at the end of the day, you want a government that operates in the best interest of all taxpayers and not for personal or private gain. President-elect Trump has blurred that line, but we're hoping, you know, he's come a long way in the 3 or 4 weeks here since the election. Let's just hope that he's getting proper advice there and will avoid any conflicts of interest that may embroil his presidency.
Scott Amey is general counsel at the Project on Government Oversight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll post a link to its letter to the Trump Transition Group and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.